it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Welcome to your Sunday night edition of Hittin' Season. I am Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Play, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Hey,
neither of us are John Stolness.
I was going to say, people have been clamoring for months, and we didn't want to mention this right off the bat, but I'm going to just dive right into it. That it's been an ongoing complaint on this podcast that John Stolness is involved at all. he is not charismatic. He is not professional. His voice is unpleasing to hear. He never seems to know what he's doing.
People actively hate him.
No notes prepared. The comment section on these podcasts when we post them is just full of the other two are great. Why is John Stolness here? He doesn't bring anything. He doesn't hold the whole thing together in any way, shape, or form. So we're addressing that finally is what we're doing tonight, is that John Stolness is out. It's just the two of us, me and Liz, forever. And people, we're giving the people what they want, finally. And I think that needs to be addressed. How about you?
I can't keep up this charade, John. Please don't ever leave us.
Yeah, John is, of course.
We love you, John.
Traveling for the 4th of July holiday. I'm sure he's, I feel like at this point, people are on their way back from wherever they've been. And we're not going to give you John's location because his many ravenous fans will track him down and disrupt his precious family time while the rest of us are busy recording Phillies podcasts like the actual professionals we are. So that's what we're going to do with the season at its midpoint. We're going to talk about the Phillies. We're going to talk about baseball, just all the hitting season stuff you want. But finally, from the only two people you weren't hitting season from. That's the formula. Liz.
I feel like apologizing.
Stop apologizing. We're doing this. We talked about it and we're doing it.
Okay.
In any case, we are now halfway through the Major League Baseball calendar. The season's 81 games old for the team we follow, the Philadelphia Phillies. Liz, at this point, I just got to ask, Where's this team headed? We have spent half the season getting to know them. We know that they brought in a lot of talent, that they may not have all the talent they thought they had, that they paid very much for some of that talent. But this team is still full of holes. This team has one rather sizable hole in its pitching staff. We're going to get into that a little more in depth. But it also is competing in a division where the Braves seem like they're poised to run away with things. We initially thought this was going to be a 4-team scrum. Looking back, I don't know why we took the Mets seriously. We just took them seriously because Brody Von Wagenen told us to, and we just did. And looking back, that was stupid. So whoops. But now we're looking
to play them all the time.
Yeah,
because Phillies, I think they would continue to melt down externally and internally.
Seriously.
Like the hair throwing incident that Andy Martino reported on, that he said the most concerning thing isn't that Brody Van Wagenen threw a chair, at Mickey Callaway and demanded, what was it? Go do your fucking press conference. You're gonna have to bleep that. But that's what he said.
Demanded his firstborn. Yeah. I keep calling him Von Wagenen by mistake. It is not the way his name is pronounced, but it does make him sound more like a James Bond villain.
I was going to say, it makes him sound like a count.
But in any case, they're not in good shape in New York. And really, they're the only team that it seems like the Phillies can play and sustain some sort of success against, because lately, the way the narrative has gone, this team looked terrible. They played the Mets for four games, swept the Mets in all four games. Then it was we all believed the Phillies are back. They had been struggling. They fell out of first place. They got beat by the Braves, who will be their division rival. They got swept by the Marlins, who shouldn't be anyone's rival right now. And the Phillies looked and felt a lot better after that four game sweep of the Mets, when they were playing in Philadelphia in late June. Then they turn around and lose two out of three to the Marlins again. And it was just like, who are we dealing with here? What is this team? Following that, they did win big in game three of that series against the Marlins. They scored 13 runs. We've seen a lot more good Aaron Nola come out, which has been great. He came out in that first game in the Braves series. The Phillies played three games against the Braves, won the first game 2-0 on the back of a pretty tremendous Aaron Nola start. And then they dropped the next two games. And then now they've finished out the first half playing the Mets, took 2 out of 3 from the Mets. Honestly, they should win every game against the Mets. But this is kind of where we are now. The team that seems to take a step forward and then 3 steps back. But I don't know. How do you view the 2019 Phillies now that we're in this position halfway through the year?
I definitely, like a lot of people, expected them to be better. But, you know, looking at everything on balance, it's better than last year by an incomprehensible amount. Even though the product on the field is frustrating, it's so much better than it was. Everyone is now actively trying to get to this one goal. There's no doubt that everyone wants to get to a place where this is a winning team. And so, you know, I feel like the more they try, the closer they're going to get. And, you know, they took a big swing and it didn't totally connect. And, you know, they're an inconsistent team and they're, you know, frustrating and infuriating. But I feel better about them than I have in years. You know, and looking at it on balance, I would much rather experience this than any version of any team we've had.
The Philadelphia Phillies in 2019, it's interesting you addressed last year because I wanted to talk about that too. Right now, the Phillies are 47-43. They are 6.5 games out of first place. They are in third place, 0.5 game behind the Washington Nationals to close out the first half of the season. They've dropped 5 of their last 10, whereas the Nationals have won 8 of their last 10 and have looked in recent weeks much more like a playoff team than the Phillies. By this point last year, on July 7th, 2018, the Phillies were 49-37. They were tied for first place, and Jake Arrieta had just helped author a win in Pittsburgh, a 3-2 victory. That was their sixth win in a row. So honestly, they looked a lot better last year at this point than they do this year. And what does that mean? Nothing really.
No, it means nothing because we have the benefit of hindsight on last year. We knew that what we were experiencing was at the high point, I believe.
Yeah, this was it was the first weekend in August that everyone considered like that moment where they swept the Marlins in 4 games and then they were just never the same team again. It was inexplicable. They just didn't show up the rest of the season. These current Phillies, yeah, they were 17-11 in May, and that's probably when they looked their best. But hopefully, I've been saying that we haven't seen this team at its best yet. I think there's a fully weaponized version of the 2019 Phillies that just hasn't surfaced yet. Whether that version of them ever does is kind of the question we've been trying to answer, or will try to answer during the All-Star break. But I don't know. I mean, my hope that team eventually comes around is, you know, it's not high, certainly, at the moment. And I want to believe that they're in there, that a team with Bryce Harper hitting in the 3-hole, that a team with went out of its way to trade its top prospect for JT Realmuto, a team with Rhys Hoskins, who really has yet to hit one of his hot streaks, his patented home run mashing hot streaks, a team with him on it is going to be a better team, a team that went out and got Gene Segura in a great trade. But like, here we are. Gene Segura's not in the All-Star game. You know who is? Carlos Santana. You know who looks great? JP Crawford. Now, I would never go back, and I don't think we have any trades we need to regret right now. But at the same time, this team acquired its talent to be better than it is. And yeah, you do wind up in some cases, like with Andrew McCutchen, freak accidents, and unarguably the Phillies' biggest loss of the season was losing Andrew McCutchen. But you also just expect guys of this caliber to play better. And I guess we'll use that as a segue to just talk about the end of this series with the Mets. The Phillies beat the Mets 8-3 on another Aaron Nola game. He pitched a 5 1/3 of hitless baseball, and we'll get back to that. But we also learned that Jake Arrieta has bone spurs in his elbow. He had bone spurs in 2011 as well as something that he's pitched through before, but also had surgery for before. He hit three batters in his last appearance, which infuriated the Mets, including Todd Frazier. The umpires, you know, once again, mishandled that situation. By the way, Mickey Callaway running out and saying, "Why are you warning us?" after Jake Arrieta hit Todd Frazier with a pitch. I assume not on purpose. But the umpires warned both dugouts, and Mickey Callaway came out and was like, "Why are you warning us?" And it became like a huge argument. Same exact way Gabe Kapler was ejected for the first time. He came out asking the same thing. "Why are you warning us? We are not the, we are the team getting hit with baseballs, not the team that's hitting people with baseballs." Seems like a different, you know, different protocol should exist for that situation, because it's always going to raise that question.
That whole incident was so strange. Because by right, I mean, if they're going to warn both dugouts, then Arrieta should have been ejected. Like, no question. After he hit a batter after the warning happened. And while whoever the hell it was at the plate, who was handling all of this, you know, I appreciate his surety that he can identify what is and isn't intentional. And I agree that they probably weren't intentional. There's no reason for that. But also, there needs to be some consistency. There just needs to be some consistency across everything. Like, if the position was reversed, I'd be infuriated. That's what we would have been leading the podcast off with tonight. Why do the umpires hate the Phillies? If this was reversed, that's what we'd be talking about. But since, you know, it's not, you know, we're happy, but he should have been ejected. No question. If he's going to go to the trouble of warning both dugouts, because I think this is a direct quote, everyone was getting pissy, which I kind of love.
And I mean, you know,
I do too. I love that. I have to figure out where I saw that, because I
sit here and strongly that that was, like, that, oh, was, why are you quote, warning us? And I'm agreeing with Mickey Callaway on that. But at the same time, we all know why they're both getting warnings. It's because the Mets get, you know, if they're unhappy, they are going to throw a baseball at a Phillies player. It is going to happen. This is the way baseball's been done for like years and years. We all know what the next phase is. So they're kind of trying to nip that in the bud by warning both dugouts. But it just seems silly and dumb. And it always allows that question to be asked. And it's, you know, rightfully so.
Today, when Tommy Hunter was pitching to Todd Frazier, he threw him like two or three straight pitches right at his shins, like in, but way down. And Todd Frazier, you know, stared in like he's a big man or some stupid crap. And, you know, it was just like, if you're going to throw close, do it there. Like that's acceptable. That, I mean, he was annoyed by it, which was the only purpose, which I approve of. It wasn't payback. It was, we're going to bother you now because we can. And I appreciate pettiness, that type of pettiness.
The quote that was very much discussed afterwards was Jake Arrieta in the locker room after the game saying, "If Frazier's not happy about it, he can come see me. I'll put a dent in his skull," which is so particular. And it's so much. He's Jake Arrieta loves drama, apparently. He said this. I really like how he said it in the dugout or in the clubhouse, really calmly, with those big, crazy Jake Arrieta eyes, as he was just stroking his beard. And he just was like, if he wants to, he can come see me and I will put a dent in his skull, which Todd Frazier said later was, quote, a little overboard. Because it absolutely is. Frazier says there's no bad blood between us. I know him really well. I don't know why. Yeah, why would he say that? Yeah, so that was kind of crazy. And honestly, go ahead.
What's happening? It feels like Arrieta has Votto a type, really strange, dry sense of humor. Yes. I'm not saying he wasn't serious, but if they also know each other really well, I wouldn't put it past him that it's just like the deepest of deep inside jokes. So deep and he really inside didn't. That, and that was, Todd made Frazier it even more entertaining.
And watching this footage and hearing him say that, it was like, yeah, obviously, as fans and supporters so of good. The Philadelphia Phillies, you're kind of looking at this from Arrieta's perspective more so than Frazier's. And it made me think, I really wish I liked this guy. I really wish it was easier for me to get behind Arrieta because he's got that quiet psychopath streak to him. But he's never really been the guy that he was acquired yes. to be. Oh. Jake Arrieta deal. I mean, my question for you is going to be, do you feel like Jake no. Arrieta has been worth what he was paid to come to the Phillies? And at this point, I just feel like, no, I feel like he has always been a question mark. I can't go back and trace all like a couple of, no. you know, classic great Jake Arrieta Phillies starts. I can mostly just remember 6-7 run eruptions. And I know people give him particular crap because he is, you know, when someone is complaining in public about the Phillies or about like, oh, we didn't come out and, you know, we didn't come out to win today. We looked lackadaisical. It's typically Jake Arrieta. I don't really fault him for that. Like, he should pitch better and has been mostly a disappointment, but I like that component to him. Somebody's got to be the veteran. Oh, and last year there were not a lot of options. This year, I think you have much, much more balance. The team has, you know, some youth to it, some veteran presence to it. But I want, when the team looks as lackadaisical as they did last year, someone to be like, hey, what the hell's going on? And Jake Arrieta has done that. So I don't fault him as much for that. What I do fault him for is pitching, and it's been not good. So, you know, we can run through the stats if we want, but we all know Jake Arrieta has never been really the true number two pitcher that we wanted to see behind Aaron Nola. You know, thank God Aaron Nola is starting to look like his old self again in his last four starts. Jake Arrieta doesn't even have an old Jake Arrieta version of himself from his Phillies days for us to hope he goes back to. He's been with the team since the start of last season. He's now 33 years old. But with the Phillies, he's thrown just a hair over 280 innings, and he's got a 4.23 ERA. And it's just like, no, we need to see better. We need some, you know, the anger is good, the motivation is good, but you got to be something a little more than mad at this point. You got to be, you got to show us something that's going to change, because otherwise, this is just, he's just not helping. He has not helped. If anything, he's subtracted from a couple of wins. This offense has shown it can't always come through. It can't always support a pitcher that's only going out there and throwing 3-4 innings. We've seen that depth is a consistent issue on this team, and Jake Arrieta has been a big part of that. So I don't know. What are your feelings on Jake Arrieta at this point, with him being at the center of all this drama, right at the season's halfway mark, and like as statistically never really pulling his weight as far as the number two pitcher in the rotation?
I never actually expected him to pitch that well. I like that they went out and got him because they needed to do something. They needed to go out and they needed to make a move. And at that point in the season, that was the best thing for them to do. But you know, they were paying him enough, and he was old enough and had you know, so many issues that I looked at the contract and I just didn't ever think he was going to live up to it. And I've never really warmed to him because I was hoping he'd show something more, and he didn't. You know, it's disappointing. Like I don't dislike him. I'm just not a fan of him as a pitcher, you know, but I how many players are really actually going worth the big contracts they get?
I hear that, and that's a, you know, that's a philosophical question that I feel like is certainly worth asking. But in this particular case, I just feel like it's a little more cut and dried. We don't have to wonder. He has underperformed. He really has. And
oh, absolutely.
And this is just like this. We know Todd Zielecki said before one of these three Mets games during an interview, he said this team should be focused on, in his mind, should be focused on starting pitching. But he said what we've all been saying for weeks, that they don't have the assets to acquire a real difference maker in that regard. What they need is guys like Arrieta stepping up and being better. Again, seeing that from Aaron Nola has been huge, and that is a huge difference maker. But at the end of the day, as we've been saying, Madison Bumgarner is not going to save this team. Jake Arrieta could save this team. If he can string together enough good starts, effective starts, deep starts, the way Aaron Nola has, then this is a better team. This is unquestionably a better team, and gives the offense a chance to do what it can do. We've seen it do. Jake Arrieta just hasn't done you know, he doesn't give you the examples as a member of the Phillies to think, oh, he's going to go back to that. And at this point, now we're going
to. No, I don't think he's ever given that to us. I mean, I'm trying to go back and think, like, when has he given us two to three good starts in a row that were actually good, not just, well, all right, you know, he only gave up four runs, he pitched seven innings. Like, that's fine. But we're talking like an actual good start.
Yeah.
You know,
when is
the Aaron Nola that we've seen
right
recently? Like, I don't think he's done that more than once in a blue moon.
Last year, over that time period in early August that we were just saying was when the Phillies, probably the last time they looked as good as they were going to look last year, on August 6th, he made a start against the Diamondbacks and he threw eight innings, no runs, two walks, three hits. That was it's a gem. That's you want to see.
Exactly.
You want to see that a little more, but you expect to see that kind of start a lot more from Jake Arrieta. But I looked that up because I was like, what is the Jake Arrieta game? Like, what was the game that made us think, oh yeah, this guy, this, you know, this is why you go out and get a Jake Arrieta. But no, I completely forgot about that start. It's the only time in 2018 that he went eight innings. He went over seven a couple of times, but and he actually went seven innings, looks like eight times last year, and eight times in 31 appearances. So that's not going to cut it, especially if you're only going eight innings one time. So, yeah, I think Jake Arrieta has been – the bone spur thing isn't really surprising, and frankly, it just – if anything, it forces them to address even more immediately the fact that this team just needs starting pitching help. It needs not just starting pitching help. It doesn't need just more arms, which it feels like they love to do, just add more arms. It needs better arms. It needs guys who, you know, aren't just, oh, Jake Arrieta, the name recognition, the free agent who was available for them to acquire last year. They need somebody, they need a proven starting pitcher to slot in behind Aaron Nola if they want to even have a shot. And that's honestly, we'll talk about this when we come back from the first grade, but that's kind of what I want to discuss as well. Where is this team headed? Because at this point, I think we still don't know, but we'll get into that after this break. So Jake Arrieta's fate, talking about the Phillies in the second half of 2019, that's going to factor a lot into that, but a lot of things will. Obviously, the offense has come and gone this season. We haven't seen what we wanted to see from Bryce Harper. I mean, don't let me speak for you, Liz, but I haven't seen exactly what I want to see from Bryce Harper. I love seeing him hit 500-foot home runs. I love seeing him admire them. I love seeing him get along well with his teammates. I love seeing him get along well with the fans and to really take to the city. And now that all that's out of the way, I would love to see Bryce Harper hit over 250. You know, I would love to see Bryce Harper be the 2015 MVP. And one of the arguments we've seen put forth this year is that maybe that's just not the kind of player he is. I don't know. I mean, where are you on this particular issue? He's 26 years old. He's obviously signed for a 13-year deal with the Phillies, so strap in. But he's hitting 251 in 2019 with an 840 OPS. He's got four all-star seasons coming into this year, but wasn't an all-star this year. So something's going on, you know, either whether it's just like it's not happening, the balls aren't dropping or something else. But for the most part, it's just sort of like this is the guy you paid to be the center of your franchise and to author a bunch of playoff seasons moving forward. Should this team be thinking about the playoffs in 2019 with Bryce Harper hitting 251 and Jake Arrieta having bone spurs in his elbow?
I mean, there are other reasons why they shouldn't be thinking about the playoffs. I don't think Bryce Harper is the only reason. I haven't been unhappy with him this year.
It's tough to be mad at him. I'm not upset with him.
I mean, like, I get everything you're saying, and I don't even necessarily disagree, but he signed for 13 years. He has a no trade clause. He's not going anywhere. It's a long time. We've got a long time ahead of us. And so let's save the anger for when he might actually, you know, not when he might earn it, when he might deserve it, when we need to actually get rid of it. Because I don't think we're really angry at him as much as we're angry at kind of everybody.
Yeah. I mean, there's no one in this lineup who is who you could credit with really, you know, keeping things together, I don't think. But then again, what
I mean, Harper's been doing a lot better lately.
Yeah, and that's true, too, that Bryce Harper has looked better of late. I mean, Liz, like,
As of today, he's hitting 253.
Yeah, so. In the last week, he was hitting 263 with an 865 OPS. He has a home run. In the last 2 weeks, he's got 12 home runs, which is a lot. And wow. In the last 4 weeks, he has 21 home runs. So he is hitting the ball hard. It's just those other numbers of, like, you know, his batting average remains low. And I know some people don't value that as much. His on base percentage is around 400 in that time span as well. So, you know, the guy is in there, you know, the guy we want to see is in there. He's been hitting righties a little less than lefties. He's hitting 240 against righties. He's hitting 276 against lefties. People wanted to see him hit really well at Citizens Bank Park. And his numbers, as we discussed, I think last week on this show, that they're pretty in line with his career numbers at Citizens Bank Park. Just because, you know, he said, I love playing there. He still was hitting about, I think, 263 at Citizens Bank Park in his career. And that's about what he is when he's playing there now. So, that's, you know, moving forward, Liz, if we were going to, obviously this team needs to address its pitching issues, but if you could only, if you were just backed into a corner and you could only make adjustments as far as the offense goes, would you make any serious changes to the offense? Would you make any big acquisitions? And if you could, if you even know, could get specific enough to know who that would be, would you make any of those changes?
No, I don't think so. What are you going to do? Where are you putting him? Who are you getting rid of? Like, who are you going to find that's better than Michael Franco?
Yeah.
Like, Franco is, like, he's not great. He's
it's
not
easy
great.
To find
he's
a better player than Michael player. Franco, but in the position the Phillies are in, it's harder than you'd think.
Exactly. Like, I'm not saying they're, like, where are they going to find that player who is good enough and will be, and can be traded for what they'd be willing to give up? Because I don't think they're not in a position to give up anybody serious. Nor should they. They can't. They're too early in the rebuild to start completely cleaning out. I mean, too early in the post-rebuild. Like, this is the first year.
That's what makes this team really interesting to talk about, is that we can see what the problems are. But basically, the biggest solution, the only solution you can provide is, well, you just got to wait for these good ball players to be good ball players again. And it's, you know, even when this team isn't operating at its most menacing, they still wound up in first place for most of the season. So this is a good team. It's just, I mean, what are you supposed to say to people when the answer is, we're just going to see if this turns out? Because I don't think the Phillies do nothing. I think they're going to make some moves here, and they might even address the offense. They acquired Jay Bruce this year. Don't forget that happened. So they did address the offense in that capacity.
I will eat my words about that forever. But I said that Matt Klentak was obsessed with him, because he was. He tried to get him 2 years in a row. And he just continued his quest for Jay Bruce. And it has been probably one of the movies made that has turned out the best in his entire tenure, just in this short time.
Yeah, since coming here, Jay Bruce, you know, he had that really hot start when he had a couple of big home runs. He had four home runs in his first four games with the Phillies. You know, did Jay Bruce save the Phillies season?
He might have. I mean, if we're really talking about it, if we're really doing this,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. The answer is definitely yes.
So, I mean, that was the move. That was a move for them to make, and they made it, and the team got better because of it. But I'm not sure. Yeah, I just don't think there's not a lot you can do. You just got to make. You got to wait for your Gene Seguras to start hitting extra base hits. You got to wait for your Bryce Harpers to start hitting more home runs. You got to wait for your Reese Hoskins to start slugging more, or just get into one of those patches where he can't help but slug the Christ out of the ball. So, I at this point, you got to just sit back and enjoy the All-Star break. I feel like, you know.
Everyone needs it. Everyone needs it. I think it's another case of, you know, it's not that the team puts a lot of pressure on itself naturally, because they weren't doing that at the beginning of the season, because it was just easy. It was coming very easily to everybody. And so they didn't stress. And then all of a sudden that went away. Not all of a sudden, it happened over a period of time, but it went away and no one knew how to get it back. And I think they all just need a break. I think everyone needs to go home. There couldn't be a better year for no one to make the All-Star game. Except the one dude that needs the most rest, JT Realmuto, who refuses to let Andrew Knapp play in his place ever. I know, like, it's great, but man, he's Yeah. Take care of yourself, especially dude. Right now. Please. With... This is how their knees explode and that's real early.
Honestly, it's a big story flowing through MLB right now is catcher health, more to do with concussions than anything else. Francisco Cervelli of the Pirates talked about having his sixth concussion and saying, like, that's it. I don't want to be a catcher anymore. I can't do it. And you don't blame him. Honestly, you don't. It's just like, I can't. Six concussions. Does he ever not have a headache? Like, good Lord.
Like, Tommy Joseph, that almost ended his career before he made the majors.
He was fighting. That was his issue. That's why they moved him to first base for that reason. And, I want to see as much of JT Realmuto as we can get because he's, so much better than Andrew Knapp. But at the same time, we saw Jake Marisnyk of the Astros and Jonathan Lucroy of the Angels collide today in an absolutely brutal play to watch. I got to tell you.
Jake Marisnyk, let's just take a second. Jake Marisnyk should be suspended. I don't understand. Everyone who has not seen this, take a look at it. Jake Marisnyk is 100% targeting Jonathan Lucroy, and it's inexcusable. And I hate
don't
the
want
Astros so
Realmuto,
much.
Realmuto, who is the Phillies' representative in the All-Star game, not having a great season, not having as good a season as we wanted to see. Again, that's a common theme for this team, but still deserves to be in the All-Star game. There's a reason he is the Phillies' representative in the All-Star game. And if he keeps playing this much, he'll wind up in more situations like this. And that's definitely not what you want for your starting catcher, the guy you're hoping to sign to a bigger deal. We're going to learn a lot more about JT Realmuto in the days to come on The Good Fight as we feature him being the sole Phillies All-Star this season. But Liz, just a sample preview of what we're going to be talking about. Liz, do you think the Phillies... do you think JT is playing for the Phillies after 2020? He's signed through next season, but after that, anything goes. I believe he's 29 years old, he finds that ground. I always think he's younger than he is, and then when I find out how old he is, he's actually older than I think he is somehow simultaneously as well. Oh, he's 28. He's 28 years old. Catcher gets beat up a lot just by playing his position, put up great numbers. The reason the Phillies went after him, not just for the season last year he had hitting, he won a silver slugger with the Marlins, but also, they call it pop, just his ability to throw out base runners. I think that's been one of the biggest assets underrated the Phillies have had this year, being able to eliminate base runners like that from a position where, Jorge Alfaro could throw the living hell out of the ball. He had such a great cannon, but at the same time, we were seeing a lot of base stealers. Phillies were giving up all.
How often did it go really where he wanted it to? Mm-hmm. Like, he threw it fast, but it wouldn't necessarily be on target. Like, there's an art to it. It's not just hard throwing. And Realmuto has found the art.
He knows exactly
of it.
What he's doing. And frankly, that's, like I said, that's an asset this team has really gotten to enjoy. And I hope, it's nice people are getting used to seeing that, but man, just think back a couple of years, because that is no guarantee that you have a catcher who's good at that. So I want to see him obviously stay on the Phillies.
I think he will. I think he will. I don't think it'll be more than like maybe a 3 or 4 year deal. I can't see it being more than that. He's a catcher. I just can't. If he wants more than that, he will probably go elsewhere. But I think the Phillies would make it worth his while.
What do you expect this team? What is a major change you see this team taking the field having undergone in 2020? Like, we're halfway through 2019. I'm wondering whether this team is destined for the playoffs at this point. I think they're good enough for it, but we've seen what we've seen. In 2020, what is a major change you think the Phillies have undergone when they take the field on opening day?
I mean, there are really two choices. It's either third base or starting pitching. Those are the only places that I think you could make a meaningful change that would actually be worth whatever they're going to have to give up to get it. I don't know who you could replace on the field who's there right now, or who should be there at least. You can always get better players, but like realistically, they've got pretty good players everywhere. But they need a lot of help in the starting rotation because, like, this is the year where we have to stop asking, hey, is this Nick Pivetta's year? Is this Vince Velasquez's year? Like, we're not allowed to say that anymore because this is like the fourth, third or fourth.
The fun of that. Player development is over for me.
We're done with that.
I'm ready to see some good baseball players. And
Scott Kingery made a pretty nice play out there in center. I think he's.
I think that's a huge highlight. It's easy to focus on some of the negatives with this team, especially with the news of Arrieta's bone spurs and Arrieta in general. But Scott Kingery has been a hell of a narrative for this team, not just from a narrative perspective, but from the fact that. Last year he struggled so much after signing that deal, but seeing him really take flight in center field has been awesome. And that's exactly what this team needs. You sign your Bryce Harper to be Bryce Harper, but you're relying on the Scott Kingerys to become the kind of player Scott Kingery has become. And there was no guarantee of that, because in this terrifying, crippling sport, there are no guarantees of anything, but you need your backup guys, your supporting cast to really step up. And, we talk about 2009 on our other podcast, Continued Success. And last season we talked about 2008. The team they wanted CC Sabathia, didn't get him, had to settle for Joe Blanton. And he wound up being a pretty solid get for them. He wound up being the guy they needed. I'm not saying they wouldn't have been better with Sabathia, but they were able to make an acquisition that helped change their outlook without getting, the biggest blockbuster name on the market. And that's kind of the only option they have this year, is going out and getting whatever Joe Blantons are lying around by opening day next year. It's like we're saying, I don't see what I would want to change from this lineup based on what's available to me. If I'm the Phillies GM, not everything is, because I don't have the assets to make a JT Realmuto kind of trade anymore, depending on what else we see from the Phillies minor league system this year. But at the same time, this team should be better. And so I think that's the team that takes the field next year is probably pretty much the same one that we're seeing now. I think you do see some adjustments to the rotation. If it is a Joe Blanton type, I think that's much more likely. But I think that's where the differences are going to be. And at this point, we've been talking about this so much, I think that's unarguable. It's easy to see what's wrong with this team. It's just baseball. They play it every night for 6 months. So sometimes it's not NBA free agency. The changes don't come immediately. So I think we see a lot of the familiar faces next year. And hopefully there's a reason for that. Hopefully the second half of this year gives us a reason to look forward to that. So I don't know. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'll say I'll gladly take, like, thinking about third base, I would take a Josh Donaldson who took a gamble on himself. I think he's doing pretty well this year.
Yes, he's blowing up recently.
Yeah. He took a chance on himself and did a 1-year contract that's, worth a lot of money. And, the Braves are reaping they're reaping all the rewards of that. I wouldn't say no to the Phillies signing him next year. Or like, was yep. Mike?
I mean, that's who we were looking at going into this season.
We had another mm-hmm. 1-year contract. Like the Phillies, I wish they would have tried something like that. I think the time to try that was this past year, because those guys aren't going to do that again. And so, if they're lucky enough, a guy like Donaldson is available, because they need a better third baseman. They do. If they're going to upgrade and on offense, that's the place to do it. That's the only place to do it, where, you could get a better second baseman, but that's what you got Scott Kingery for to begin with. And he's overplaying center now.
Are we talking about a Scott Kingery who is a second baseman anymore? I know their ideal for him is to be a Zobrist type who can play anywhere, any one of these positions, but like Cesar Hernandez is the Phillies second baseman. We think that, right?
Yeah, we're done discussing that essentially. I mean, they might move him back, but at some point, why would you do that? It's like, not to bring him up, but Odubel Herrera was an infielder and they moved him to center field. And there was never any, if they had an opening in the infield for whatever reason, there was never a discussion about bringing him back there. I think once you put him out there, he's there. But, if they don't have a second baseman, but they can sign a great center fielder, I feel like that's the only time they would bring him back. He's not a Zobrist type anymore because they actually need a center fielder.
Yeah, and it's been great to see him kind of take that role on and become that center fielder. The last guy I want to talk about before we go to our second break is Aaron Nola. We'll just take a second and gush about Aaron Nola, because frankly, it's nice to see a familiar face. And I put it that way because on this team, I love the players that are on this team. I really do. But it does feel like there's some strangers down there still, even though we're halfway through the season. I mentioned this again as part of our Real Muto coverage. I don't know what JT Real Muto's voice sounds like, and he's been on the team for a while now, a pretty big part of the team. So, I feel like I don't know a lot of these guys. And Aaron Nola, we do know, and we haven't really recognized him for most of this season, but his last few starts have been really exactly what this team needed. Going into the performance today against the Mets, where he looked great again, his last three appearances had been against the Marlins, Mets, and Braves. He went at least 7 innings in all 3 games, and 2 of them he went 8 innings. He had two 10 strikeout games. He's had 28 strikeouts in all 3 of those games. And that's all not counting today. That ERA melted down below 4. And, you know, this is what we need to see. We need to see more of this. And that's, you know, it seems obvious to be like, this team needs its good players to be good, and it needs them to be good for a long time. Like, yeah, that is. But at the end of the day, that's all at this point what you can say. The Braves have good players who are being good players, and that's why they're in first place and the Phillies aren't. Same with the Nationals. That's why they're in second place and the Phillies aren't. So Josh Donaldson, and by the way, he did blow up for a minute, but he hasn't gotten a lot of playing time in the last 2 weeks. He's got 38 at-bats, and he's hitting 132. So he's not as hot as I thought he was. But in the last 4 weeks, he is hitting 270 with an OPS just a hair over 1,000. And that's, you know, that's what the Braves needed. They acquired Donaldson to do that. There wasn't a guarantee that he would, and he's just panning out at the moment. The Phillies, I think they have more panning out to do. I think we're going to see a couple of guys catch fire, and this team, you know, is going to look a little better at first stretches during the second half. But at the same time, if they're just not playing well, then like, what can you do? And that's what this team's gonna have to figure out going into the trade deadline. Are we gonna shake things up? Are we gonna add more talent to this group and really, you know, hope this year is the year? Or do we just accept that this is year one of a 13-year Bryce Harper centric plan, and, you know, we did it wrong, and we gotta go back a few steps and think about, all right, how are we gonna improve this team moving forward and really can create a playoff team? Do you think the Phillies view themselves? This is kind of an asinine question, but do you think the Phillies view themselves as a playoff team? Like, obviously, in public, they will, and to each other, they always, you know, no one's going to come out and say, like, well, we suck, we're out. But do you think Matt Klentak sits in his windowless room with concrete walls with his smartphone and genuinely thinks that the team he's built now, after seeing the first half he's seen, is a playoff team?
That's a really good question. I mean, probably yes, maybe. But also, I mean, his job is to be brutal. Mm-hmm. His job is to look at the team he has playing in front of him, not the team that he, you know, wishes exists. You know, his job is to make them, is to give them everything they need to be a playoff team. And if they don't have it right now, he can try and throw more at them. But I think he's probably the same place where we all are, because, I mean, we can look at this team realistically fairly easily. They have everything they need. It's just not all happening. And what can you do about that? Like, we can complain about it, but, you know, they went out, they signed the big player, they traded for 2 great players, they signed another great player. Like, they did a whole lot. They had the best offseason in baseball. They spent a lot of money and gave away a lot of prospects in return for other players, and they did everything they could.
They did what they had to do, yeah.
Exactly. If it's not working, then you can try and make some changes, but these are the players they signed on for the next few years. Like, this is it. And so if they're not going to do well, we have to play out the string, you know, to a certain extent and hope they improve. But if they don't, you just sort of have to grin and bear it, because this is what it is.
We'll go to our second break just with me reading recent Aaron Nola stats. I was giving you his last 3 starts, but in his last 4 starts, he has allowed 2 earned runs over 29 and two-thirds innings. That is a 0.61 ERA. His ERA for the season is now down to a crisp 3.74, and he's been throwing more strikes earlier in the count and getting a lot more outs from that, getting a lot more ground balls, getting a lot more fly balls. They're not going over the fence. That's been very helpful. But, you know, maybe Aaron Nola isn't the only narrative we'll be talking about in a month. hopefully. And Scott Kingery isn't the only promising young player. Hopefully this team, we're talking about a better team in a month, because I think what we're concluding here is that we very well could be. It's just a matter of, you know, keep playing baseball, I guess. You know, you got to just put the team back in the microwave. But we'll talk a little bit more about the broader MLB season right after this break. Well, Liz, halfway through the Major League Baseball calendar, let's talk a little serious and then open it back up to a big fun final discussion, because it's the All-Star break, and that's all we should be thinking about is hot dogs and firecrackers and sunsets over the but this popped into my head and I wanted to talk about it. But what is your, I mean, beyond the realm of just saying like starting pitching, I mean, just fundamentally with this team moving forward, what is your top concern? Because for me, it's that I started with, I don't think they're far enough along, far along as they thought they were initially, after they made their moves, which is kind of what we're talking about. But actually, from a wider, more troubling standpoint, it's that their evaluations told them that they would be better, and they're not. And more specifically, how does Matt Klentak evaluate players? And now, I don't mean, you know, anybody can break this down and say, okay, well, he loves guys who hit home runs and walk. He loves Jay Bruce's. You know, they focused on trying to get guys who never spent a whole lot of time on the injured list. They wanted reliable guys, steady guys. And that search brought them to Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson, two guys who have missed very significant chunks of the season. So it tells you that's, you know, that's a gamble going that route, because there's no guarantee anybody's going to stay on the field. I brought this up to the Good Fight staff, and after Matt Klentak was hired, he did an interview with Dartmouth Alumni Magazine where he says, this is in regards to the kind of players that he wants to acquire as a GM. He says, there are a lot of players in the Hall of Fame who are not A-plus human beings. We're not going to shy away from talent like that, but if we go that route, we need to make sure we are supporting that player and our team with the right surroundings to achieve team success. It's a very robotic kind of answer to the question, you know, whatever the question was. We don't have access to the question, just that he said that in regards to this topic.
I would love to know what that question was, though. Mm-hmm,
me too. And, I, you know, obviously this has been put to the test with the Odubel Herrera situation this year. I think at this point, we can't really characterize, correct me if I'm wrong, we can't really characterize how the Phillies have treated that situation, because it's still kind of being carried along by MLB protocol at this point, as well as the facts of the case, which are that the Odubel Herrera's girlfriend dropped the charges that were against him, which we know happens a lot in cases like this, and typically not for the reasons everyone thinks that it happens. So, at this point, he's kind of left with this situation, and I think it'll probably come down more so to ownership and the guys making that decision, and not Matt Klentak. The guys he's targeted haven't, you know, I can't say there's someone in particular who stands out as a not A-plus human being, but it does raise the question, what does he mean by that? And what grade is too low for Matt Klentak? I wouldn't have guessed that he felt this way, to be honest, based on, well, I mean, we don't hear him talk a whole lot anyway, but like based on the players he has gone after, I was like, oh, I guess I didn't realize he would have felt that way. He does view it, I think, very objectively, that he's just like, is this guy going to help us, or does this guy have the numbers I want to see? And then we'll think about, you know, what his personality is like later. But I don't know. I mean, is it fair to ask what exactly is the lowest grade you can have as a human being and still be on Matt Klentak's baseball team?
Yeah, I would hope that he, I really want to know what that question was, because you do need to ask how low is too low. Like, not an A-plus human being is fine. You can say that about
everybody,
essentially every single person in the Hall of Fame. Like, even, you know, the people we look up to, you know, like Roberto Clemente and Jackie Robinson, they were great people. They were important people who did incredible work and incredible things, but who is an A-plus human being?
Yeah.
That's not a thing that exists. And so, like, we get that you're going to have real humans on your team, but phrasing it like that, it just, like, not everyone in the Hall of Fame is an A-plus human being. there's some righteous bastards in the Hall of Fame. Like, that's a huge spectrum he's giving himself. Like, they don't have to be A-plus people. End of sentence.
Exactly. But yeah, it does. It makes you wonder. And it's an interesting quote given the situation the Phillies are in now. Seems like they've distanced themselves from Herrera. They took down a banner that he was on, replaced it with an Aaron Nola one. They removed him from All-Star voting, even though he wasn't going to go anyway. It really all depends on what happens next. And we say that a lot in baseball, and really, you know, it's kind of true. You know, things get determined realistically, you know, real determinations actually occur probably only a handful of times throughout the season. And that goes for all on the field and off the field stuff. And this is one of them. And it's, it really sucks for the most part. It just, I'm most just disappointed that Odubel Herrera did this, that this happened at all. I think obviously everyone is, but you know, we were big supporters of Odubel and you can't now at this point. Absolutely not. Like there's just nothing here that warrants reconsideration as far as repercussions go from the team. I wasn't going to talk about this because I forgot about it, but a column surfaced this weekend, which was pretty bizarre. It had a lot of phrasing that made it sound like people had, you know, are people not considering what Herrera brings the Phillies before they...
It was Bob Brookover. Shock.
So
come at me, Bob. Come on.
It was taken down. What, about like 40 minutes after it was published, and
barely an hour. Mm-hmm.
So clearly there was an editorial reevaluation of some kind, and this.
And I'm not clear if it went up before or after the decision about Herrera's punishment had been handed mm-hmm. down. I don't know if it went up before or after that. I thought it went up just before, because I don't believe he wrote that with the punishment in mind. Otherwise, because it was, the Phillies should give Odubel Herrera another chance, was the title of the article.
Read, the prevailing Odubel Herrera sentiment seems to be that the Phillies should rid themselves of the center fielder as soon as possible. Never mind that the 27-year-old Venezuelan once looked like he was going to surpass Shane Victorino as the best Rule 5 draft pick in franchise history. You expect this column. You expect this column to come out in this situation because somebody always writes it. It's always wrong. It's always dumb. I can't stress this enough. Nothing Odubel Herrera has done on a baseball field should factor into what happens next. And the fact that you would suggest it would is asinine. But at the same time, even in this particular case, we zero in on what? That he could have been the best Rule 5 draft pick in franchise history? Like, none of this matters, but that really doesn't matter. That's not a thing. That's not a milestone. Oh, man, and we lost out on the best Rule 5 draft pick, and who cares? Like, you know, you almost get it if somebody was like, but no, you don't get it. But if somebody was like, oh, he was on pace to be the franchise leader in home runs or something, that's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's a big deal. This is just, yeah, this is a guy who is going to be the best type of his kind of player we've ever seen. Why is this worth mentioning? Why? It just creates that question even more so that, like, why is this an argument or a conversation we need to have? He went on to write, that feeling is somewhat understandable because he had already fallen out of favor with the fan base even before he poured gasoline on his own fire with his Memorial Day arrest in Atlantic City on assault charges. Who wants a troublemaker that cannot play anymore? First of all, a troublemaker is a terrible way to characterize the arrest that Odubel Herrera, the crimes for which Odubel Herrera was being charged. And saying who wants a troublemaker that cannot play anymore. Again, his on the field play should factor into exactly none of this. And that you have to explain that to a grown adult is pretty flabbergasting.
Yeah, they took it down. That's, I mean, how embarrassing.
He rewrote a whole second column.
Of course. He had a second column that was mm-hmm. worse, and there is no depth. There is no bottom when it comes to this stuff. It's so appalling. It's so galling. They printed it on the front page of the sport of the actual physical paper. I don't even have the words. It's so gross. It's really the only word for it.
The second version of the column had more to do with comparing Herrera's cases to other athletes, even outside of baseball.
That's a whole thing. Like he says that Brookover said it was too long when compared to other punishments, which is true. Herrera's punishment was 85 games, the rest of the season, a little bit of the next one. No postseason eligibility, which is different than Roberto Osuna, who was also arrested but not charged, or he was arrested, charged, and the charges were dismissed last year for an alleged violent incident with his girlfriend. And like, yeah, it's long. The frustration is that we don't know whether Rob Manfred gave this out because this is the new standard after getting so much crap from people because Ozuna was eligible for the play for the postseason last year when he clearly should not have been. We don't know if it's the new normal or if they actually knew more, if the investigation turned up more and we just don't know about it. That's what's frustrating. Brooke Overwood approached it from the angle of this is wrong no matter what. I'm not going to consider any other viewpoints other than this is too long when compared to others. So it is incorrect.
Yeah. So that, that brought
Shut
that
up, Bob.
Issue back to light and Herrera has been suspended for the remainder of this season. Honestly, I don't think it's crazy to see him back, to think we'll see him back with the Phillies. Unfortunately, I really hope we don't. It looks like that's, you know, that's potentially going to happen. And I think the hope here is that for at least part of this is that after a year, after missing out the season, this issue will be forgotten the way that it typically gets forgotten. When it was Roberto Ozuna, when it was Jose Reyes, when it was Addison Russell, like these are the just people, I think from a PR standpoint, just hope people forget. People don't forget, but that doesn't seem to matter. And I was really hoping the Phillies could be the team for whom something like this could seem like it mattered. And, you know, there's still more to be sorted out here. Hopefully they can still be that team. But, you know, unfortunately, we're talking about professional sports and there's a reason this has always been the case. So.
Yeah, I mean, the job, it is like the responsibility of me and other people who are offended by it and who are upset by it to make sure that we never let anyone else forget. Like, I'm not saying bring it up at bad times, but like, you don't have to be excited about him. You don't have to cheer for him. And if people ask why, remind them about it. Because the Phillies can trot him out there. That doesn't mean I'm going
to
cheer.
Well, just to open this back up to a more positive area to go out on here as we conclude this episode of Hittin' Season, Liz, with the season halfway gone, what has been something in all of baseball you've seen this year that has amazed or surprised you?
Amazed or surprised me.
Could be the Phillies, could be outside the Phillies. If you need a second, I know I just sprung that on you. My thing, because I have
prepared.
A great
answer.
I prepared. The
question.
My favorite part of this season was the statistic. Elvis Andrews has already stolen home three times this season, and he has stolen all three bases in one game already this season, which, man, you know, he lost his buddy Adrian Beltre to retirement, but Elvis, you know, and the Rangers aren't looking great, but that was an insane statistic to me that he's stolen home three times. I haven't heard anything about that. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
me too.
Stealing home.
He's having a good year.
Elvis
is hitting 307, and he's 30 years old with Texas. He's hitting 307 with an 804 OPS, 19 stolen bases. He's really he stole 42 bases in 2013, but he's on a pretty terrific pace. Outside of that year, he's been like in the mid to high 20s as far as stolen base totals for the year, and he's already got 19. So, man, yeah, that's the most exciting play, and he's done it three times. But yeah, if anything springs to mind as far as cool stories that you feel like the baseball team has offered halfway through.
Like the first things that sprung to mind for me, like the ascent of Joey Gallo. That makes me happy. He's been around forever. I mean, forever is 2015. This is his fifth year. But I mean, that's a long time. It's half a decade he's been around, and he was 21. You know, when he started last year, the past 2 years, he hit, you know, 209, 206. This year he's at 271. Like, that's great. It makes me so happy he's having this type of season. He's already hit 20 home runs. You know, he hit 40 last year, 41 the year before. Like, to see him rise from being the new Adam Dunn to being like a really productive player who's given Texas, you know, he's given the Rangers a fighting chance. the Rangers are better than anyone thought they would be by not sucking to the center of the earth.
A little less than a year ago, and we're all reading articles about how the Phillies are one of the teams who have been most aggressive in trying to acquire Joey Gallo.
Why?
Well, in any case, should be a fun couple of days on the baseball calendar as we all take some time off, reflect on the decisions that have brought us to this point. Watch the All-Star Game, watch JT Realmuto. We all stop by the Good Fight, read a bunch of JT Realmuto content as we celebrate our Phillies All-Star for 2019, the sixth year in a row that they've sent one single player to the All-Star Game. They only need one more year of sending one player to the All-Star Game to break the record. But
that's totally going to happen. Actually,
couple of days. Make sure to come by the Good Fight. We're going to be having a lot of fun. And as always, subscribe, rate, and download all the podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including this podcast, Hidden Season, with its normal host John Stolness, as well as Continued Success with myself and Liz, and The Dirty Inning with Dirty Strunk. I almost called Trevor Dirty Strunk. Listen to The Dirty Inning with myself and Old Dirty Strunk. We'll have a new episode of that this week as well. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.